are so close to the finish line, but we are not out of the woods yet. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, why President Biden and the CDC urge mayors and governors to keep those mask orders in place, even as they start to expire, including here in Jacksonville. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Then later in the hour, why retail pharmacies like CVS are seeing such success with vaccinations. Plus, we'll have a look ahead to Florida Climate Week and how you can take part. First, though, the latest numbers on the pandemic. The state reports COVID cases increased again yesterday to a cumulative total of 2,047,000. Hospitalizations rose overnight. That's troubling. They had been declining. And deaths rose again. The death toll in the state from COVID now stands at 33,247. About 5.6 million Florida residents have gotten at least one dose of the vaccine. And on Monday, President Joe Biden urged America's mayors and governors to reinstate mask mandates if they have let them expire. It's a warning that's being echoed by the CDC and other public health experts that we are not out of the woods just yet when it comes to the pandemic. In fact, CDC Chief Dr. Rochelle Walensky pleaded on Monday to keep masking and social distancing regular practice, saying she had a feeling of impending doom because COVID cases keep spiking along with hospitalizations. Now, in our area, Mayor Lenny Curry says he will let the Duval County mask order expire at the end of this month. It's been in effect since last June. Dr. Sunil Joshi is president of the Duval County Medical Society Foundation. He's on the line as we discuss all this. Doctor, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And to our callers, what do you think about Duval County ending its mask mandate? Give us a call, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. So, Dr. Joshi, here we have the president and the CDC director begging mayors like Lenny Curry to keep mask orders in place just as they're dropping them. Are we spiking the football too close to the finish line before we're out of this pandemic?
Yeah, you know, when you stop and think about what we have learned over the last year in terms of wearing masks and social distancing and how much that has really helped to mitigate the spread of COVID-19, you can understand why the CDC director is concerned about some of these mask mandates being lifted. And so there is definitely that concern. And so absolutely 100%, we have to encourage folks to continue to wear their masks and be responsible because we are close. I mean, we are so close to the end. You could see the light at the end of the tunnel. It's coming. And we don't want to go backwards because that would be incredibly frustrating for all of us. And, you know, we sit here right now and, you know, in Duval, our percent positivity rate is around 4.1, 4.2%, which is much better than the rest of the state. And so let's hope that we can continue to do this with people being responsible.
Now, Mayor Curry said he decided to let the mask order drop based on data. Was it that particular percentage point you just mentioned, the rate of positive cases?
And hospitalization. So you look and you see that our percent positivity over the last few weeks or even the last month has remained relatively low, you know, below that 5 to 10% range where you want to kind of keep it, and less than 10% is typically suggestive of, you know, not having significant community spread. And so here we're in that low 4% range, and the hospitalizations have been good. Our hospital capacity for hospital beds is right around 30% for both hospital beds and ICU beds. So, you know, right now we're not in quote-unquote crisis mode when it comes to the pandemic. But again, things change very quickly, as we found out last summer, and only time will tell.
549-2937. Okay, let's talk about vaccinations, Dr. Joshi. Anyone 40 and older can go get their vaccine this week. Starting next week, anyone 18 and older. You have run campaigns to get people their flu vaccination.
Right.
What are your thoughts about the rate of vaccinations in Florida and people that are still hesitant to get the COVID vaccine?
Yeah, and the rate of vaccinations is probably not where we want it to be, you know, at this point. But a lot of that is because, you know, we've been limiting the groups who can receive the vaccine. You know, up until last week, it was really, you know, the elderly population, 60, 65 and older, and people with health conditions. And even the people with health conditions, you know, were only in certain vaccination sites where they could receive it. And so I think that's limited how many people have been able to get the vaccine. Hopefully now that, you know, this week we're 40 and older, and next week we're going to be everybody 18 and older, we're going to start to see those numbers go up. I know here in Northeast Florida, if you look at really only adults that are eligible to get the vaccine, because typically it's 18 and up, we have about 225,000 people vaccinated. We have about 710 adults in Northeast Florida. So we're looking at about a 31% vaccination rate. You know, obviously we'd like to see that doubled over the next couple months. And so by opening it up to everybody, I think we'll take away some of the confusion that's out there about, can I get my vaccine? Where do I go to get my vaccine? Is it okay for me to get it at this location? I think when it's open to everyone, we take the confusion out, and hopefully we'll start to see the percent of our population vaccinated increase, which of course improves our chances of reaching herd immunity.
What are your thoughts about Governor DeSantis yesterday saying he and the legislature would oppose what are known as vaccine passports, proof of vaccination to, you know, travel or be hired for a job or what have you?
Yeah. And so, you know, obviously the vaccine passport, the idea of a vaccine passport, which is somewhat vague, it could certainly have a significant beneficial effects to people who are concerned about traveling because they don't want to travel on an airplane that's full of people who haven't been vaccinated or go into a gym that may be full of people who aren't vaccinated. If people who are going into these locations have proof of vaccination, you may feel much more comfortable going to that business or going to that gym or going on an airplane. So, you know, it definitely will help to improve people's peace of mind. But I can also see the flip side. You know, there are large numbers of people who haven't had access to the vaccine as of yet. You know, Jacksonville is doing a pretty good job of having vaccine access to our underserved population, but other parts of the state may not be doing as good a job. And so you have people who aren't able to get the vaccine, not because of a desire to not get it, but because maybe their age group hasn't been included yet, or they don't have transportation to the vaccine. And now these folks get discriminated against. And so, you know, there's pros and cons to the vaccine passport. You know, personally, I think if a business wants to only have people who have been vaccinated and to come into their business, that should be up to them. You know, same, just like we're leaving it up to them whether or not they're requiring people to wear masks or not. I think the same thing should be left up to the businesses.
All right.
But that's kind of my personal thought.
That's your personal thought. Today is Doctors' Day, March 30th. It's an annual observance aimed at honoring doctors who save lives. Let's take a moment to thank all the physicians like you who've kept us alive for the last year and respect the stress that the medical community has had.
Yeah, you know, and we definitely appreciate that shout out, Melissa. And it is important. You know, we as a medical society foundation have been trying to work with physician wellness for the last few years, and burnout is the number one threat to physicians in this country. And of course, that affects the healthcare system in general, because we're kind of underserving, you know, the community with physicians to begin with. And if we start to lose physicians due to burnout or depression or even suicide, which is one of our biggest concerns, you know, the healthcare system will collapse. It's so important for us to appreciate what the men and women do on a day-to-day basis to keep us all safe. And today's one of those days for us to recognize that.
The mask order in Duval County expires at the end of March, just as the president and the CDC beg mayors to keep orders like these going. As we talk about this with Dr. Sunil Joshi, president of the Duval County Medical Society Foundation, what are your thoughts about the mask mandate? 549-2937. Mark is in St. Augustine. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning. I was kind of curious a little bit about the herd immunity thing, and personally, I'm against the mask mandate. But Melissa, earlier you mentioned 2 million people have already tested positive for COVID. I've seen studies out
in
there.
Florida.
That
yeah. Mm-hmm.
In Florida. I've seen studies out there that kind of estimate that as many as fivefold as many people have had COVID than have formally tested positive. So if we go a little bit low and say fourfold in the state of Florida, then that means an additional 8 million have probably had COVID. They were asymptomatic, didn't go get tested. So now you're at, say, 10 million people. you've got 5.6 million people who have at least received one dose of the vaccination. So now we're at about 15 million people out of a state of 22 million. Subtract out the number of young kids that don't seem to be having as much problems with COVID as maybe our elderly population in Florida does. So we're pretty close, I would say, to 60-70% of the population being covered or protected, having some type of an immune response to COVID. So I don't see a problem with reducing the mask mandate. And like your guest said, if a business wants to say, hey, in order to come in here, you got to wear a mask, I'll respect that if I want to go in there. But to have it mandated by the state, personally, I'm just against that. I'm curious about what your guest thinks about, are we close to the herd immunity?
All right. Thanks, Mark. Dr. Joshi, herd immunity.
Yeah, so good question. And, you know, it's hard when we say, you know, that we postulate that X number of people may have been positive that haven't been tested. You know, we don't know that. And it's really, really hard to look at data that way. What we do know is that we have 2 million people in Florida who tested positive. We have 5 million people who received at least their first dose of the vaccine. Some of those had been positive in the past as well. So there's some duplication there. And nationally, the story is very, very similar. I think what we can, all that we can really do is base this on people who are getting vaccinated at this point. This is a brand new novel virus that we haven't seen in this form in this country before. So people don't have antibodies that have been sitting there for, you know, years at a time, ready to come out when they get exposed to the virus again. And so what we do know is that the vaccine does help to produce those antibodies. And we don't know necessarily how much the infection causes the antibody levels to spike up. But we know that the protection is good for around 3 to 5 months. And so people who are infected earlier no longer have significant antibody levels and need the vaccine. And so, again, yes, you know, we may be closer to herd immunity than we realize, but this is one of those things that I think following the advice from the CDC is critical for us to mitigate the spread.
May is on the south side. Hello, May.
Hello, how are you doing?
All right, thanks. Go ahead.
I'm going to take it off of Bluetooth.
Sure.
Yeah, I was just on that last caller that was doing all this math, not considering at all the huge number of tourists and transient population we have, and you just can't guesstimate how many people have COVID. And ultimately, the mask thing, it's just do it. It's just so simple. Nobody likes wearing them, but it may save your life. And then the vaccine, you know, there's one huge side effect the vaccinator person told me, the person that put the first needle in my arm. You won't die. You won't be intubated. You won't be bent up in some contorted position so that they can ram a tube down your throat. And maybe people need to hear things like that so they'll kind of wake up. I don't know.
You can answer
or comment off air.
Thank you, May. You know, Doctor, thank you for that, May. Dr. Joshi, we're in a race between the virus spiking up again and the rate of vaccinations. And when the CDC says they're looking at worrisome trends, that other countries are battling this horrible new wave of infections with even more deadly variants, that's what's driving the White House calling for more caution right now, isn't it?
Absolutely, that is. And also here in the United States, you know, we leveled off after January. But in the last week or so, the numbers are picking up, you know, throughout different parts of the country. In particular, around the time that mask mandates are being lifted and people are taking their foot off the pedal a little bit. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, obviously there's reason to be concerned. There's also reason to be optimistic. And, you know, we try to stay optimistic. But I think it's important for us to know that what we have been doing for the last year has been working. I mean, we're getting closer and closer to the end. And we have to keep going. And I try to correlated to like a football game or a basketball game. You know, there's a lot of Gator fans out there. We saw our team play basketball last weekend. We were winning by 12 points and we took the pedal off the metal and we lost the game and out of the tournament. Same kind of story here. You know, don't want to simplify it too much, but let's just keep doing what's been working until we're officially out of the mess that we've been in.
Lots of tweets. Here's one that echoes that very thought. Dr. Andy tweets the show, it is human nature to ease up before the finish line. Maybe it's ego, maybe exhaustion. Either way, it's a bad idea when running for your life, he says. Lisa on our Facebook page writes, science needs to be at the forefront of all decisions when it comes to our collective health. Here's one more comment from a listener on our Facebook page. Joanna writes, I think rescinding the mask mandate now is a mistake. We still need to listen to the science. It's such a simple thing to do, and I'll continue to wear mine. Okay, so let's talk about this, doctor. Without a mask order, we will see a lot fewer masks, although a lot of people will still wear them voluntarily.
Yeah, and let's hope that, you know, this is, and that's the point here, okay? The mask mandate may have expired, but that should not necessarily change the way that we approach going out, going grocery shopping, being in public, attending your kids' soccer games. You know, wear your mask when you're outside of the house in a public setting and around other people, in particular if you cannot socially distance. Look, we are close to the end, and no one's trying to be, you know, overly negative here. You know, we're getting closer to the end. We should be very, very optimistic about how far we've come and how close we are to the end. Let's not give up now. Let's keep doing what we've been doing, and the end will come much, much sooner for all of us.
Right. And can't we, before we let you go, Dr. Joshi, can't we take a lesson from history? The great flu pandemic of 100 years ago, didn't this same thing basically happen with that pandemic where there were multiple waves, and as the last wave went around the world, people were just so exhausted that they weren't taking precautions, and that caused right. another spike in deaths?
That's right. And in the last 100 years, we've gotten a lot better in terms of science. We've gotten a lot better in terms of how to prevent spread of viruses and infections. And so, yes, we need to learn from our past. And this, you know, history is going to learn from what we do, what we have done in this country and what we've done here in Northeast Florida over the last 12 to 18 months. And our grandchildren and great-grandchildren will learn from what we've done. Let's make sure it's a very positive story as we go forward.
Always great to get your insights. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
And he's Dr. Sunil Joshi, president of the Duval County Medical Society Foundation. Again, keep wearing your masks. It's really the safest thing to do still. All right, later in the hour, how local restaurants are reacting to the end of the mask order and dealing with the easing back into something approaching normal life. That's later, but up next.
And the urgency is here. And as Floridians, we, you know, we don't have to do too much besides look outside our window to see that it's happening all around us.
Facing the climate crisis with solutions. We'll preview Florida Climate Week after this. We'll be right back.
Lounge radio around the clock. Allow the sounds of chill out, down tempo, new jazz, and reggae to relax and inspire you. Download the WJCT app or visit wjct.org/jacksmusic to start listening today.
BritBox and PBS Passport are now offering the best of all your favorite British drama, comedy, and more when you sign up at jacksbundle.com. Start watching today.
For the best music from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, tune in to 89.9 HD3, the WJCT app, or jacksmusic.org. We've got your music on Anthology on 89.9 HD3.
It's the biggest stories affecting the Sunshine State. Hi, I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup.
Each week at noon, we interview newsmakers and people from across the state discussing the stories and issues that affect your life. What's driving the conversation in Florida?
Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Every Friday at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Florida Climate Week is coming up next month. It's a four-day series of virtual events calling attention to the climate crisis and what our vulnerable coastal state needs to do to respond and protect ourselves. I got a preview from Nicole Salzberg of the event sponsor, the Volo Foundation. Hi, Nicole. Good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Melissa. I appreciate it.
I'm really excited to talk to you about Florida Climate Week. This is going to be a really impactful week for the state. Tell us what's on the agenda for Florida Climate Week.
Sure, absolutely. So yes, we hope it's going to be impactful. It will be April 19th through the 23rd. It's a work week. Monday through Thursday is sessions hosted by organizations all around the state of Florida. We're looking at about 50 sessions, which is really exciting. You know, it's varied topics: energy, economy, industry, policy. And one of the things that we did that we thought was really important to include into the agenda was breaking it down by region. So we have South, Southwest, Central, Northeast, and North Florida represented in all the sessions, which we thought was important for people to be able to, you know, find sessions that were in their neighborhoods and in their communities and that were relevant to where they are. So we're looking at sessions that, you know, are fall under all those topic areas. We have some exciting sessions that are specific to Jacksonville, which is a new addition, which we are really excited about. But there's a little bit of something for everybody.
Interesting. Tell us, we'll talk about the state as a whole in a minute, but tell us a little bit more about some of the Jacksonville specific information people will get.
Sure. So this one was just added. It's being hosted by Resilient Jacks, which is up in your area. The session's called Our Vulnerable Places, Jacksonville and Northeast Florida Underwater. And so they have about seven different speakers that are, you know, and experts and in advocates in the area who are going to talk about some of the vulnerable places in Northeast Florida and some of the impacts they're facing because of climate change. Specifically, they're going to talk about infrastructure and policy solutions that are going to help protect those communities. So it should be a great session. We're really looking forward to that one.
That's great. But you are taking a look all across the state. Of course, Florida is likely the most vulnerable state in the nation to the impacts of climate change. Climate scientists say we need to get to net zero greenhouse gas emissions in the next 20 years or so to avoid the worst impacts of the climate crisis. And, you know, as you do Florida Climate Week, we're reading this week as well that U.S. Climate Envoy John Kerry is preparing to go to a big summit in Glasgow this fall. He's calling this summit our best last hope we have in the world to avoid climate catastrophe. So while it's exciting to talk about this, can we talk a little bit about the urgency behind this? Because time is running short when it comes to addressing what most climate scientists say we can expect if we do not get serious about reducing emissions. Catastrophic flooding in Florida, inland flooding and coastal flooding, just two of the possible outcomes that we can unfortunately look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. And the urgency is here. And as Floridians, we don't have to do too much besides look outside our window to see that it's happening all around us. And so, yes, the urgency and the time to act is now, which is part of why, we think it's so important to bring something like Florida Climate Week. You know, we need people to understand that, yes, this is urgent, but the thing that's always set us apart is that we are a solutions-based conference, and we're always trying to keep it in solutions. And so what we want to connect people with, we want them to connect the dots with the fact that, yes, this is knocking on our door, it's urgent, but there are solutions in place, there are people working on it, and we want to connect those people with with the public and let people know what's going on out there. Mm-hmm. And you know, we've always believed that a collective effort is going to get us mm-hmm. better results. And so, you know, that's part of what we're trying to do is make this a free virtual event, very few barriers to access so that everybody can be a part of this and really understand that this is happening now, it's happening all around us, and it's time to do something.
Now, the state legislature is meeting. They are talking about climate change after many years of kind of ignoring it. They're talking about sustainability. They're talking about what state lawmakers and local governments need to do to face this future. Will that come up at all at Florida Climate Week?
Yeah, actually, so Thursday morning, what we've done is we've kind of sectioned the week out by topic areas. So our policy session, a policy chunk of time is going to be Thursday morning. And we have a handful of organizations that are going to be speaking to policy. We have Everglades Foundation talking about the policy and the Everglades restoration. We have Environmental Defense Fund, which the details on that are still coming in, but they're going to be talking to some elected officials, which we're really excited about what it's going to take to get the policy to support some of these initiatives. And then I think one of the more exciting sessions we have Greenleaf Communities, which is a new partner of ours, talking about carbon tax and dividends, which is another big policy initiative that could really help move the needle on climate. So mm-hmm. Thursday morning would be the time to tune in for all those sessions.
Thursday morning, but it's a full schedule of events for Florida Climate
yep.
Week, sponsored by the Volo Foundation. Register now at floridaclimateweek.org. It kicks off Monday, April 19th. And so important. I want to thank you so much for joining us, Nicole Salzberg. She's Events and Development Coordinator at the Volo Foundation. Again, floridaclimateweek.org. Nicole, thanks.
Oh, thank you, Melissa. It was a pleasure.
Well, millions of Americans are getting their COVID jabs, and getting the shot at retail pharmacies has become a very popular way to access the vaccine. Dr. Amy Lynn Safady is a pharmacy manager with CVS Health, and she's on the line with more about this. Doctor, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you on the show. And as we talk about how people are accessing vaccines at pharmacies, give us a call, 549-2937. So people are going to CVS and also to some of your competitors, we need to say, for their mm-hmm. vaccines. But how is CVS Health working to administer vaccines to America?
Yeah, we're definitely trying to reach as many, eligible patients as we can and creating kind of a seamless transition for patients to be able to schedule everything online. Patients will be able to register for both their first and second dose for vaccines requiring a two-shot series. So it guarantees that the patient will be able to get that second dose and be able to, complete their vaccination. So patients can sign up either online or through our CVS app to be able to get everything scheduled.
To make those appointments. And you're working with the CDC. Tell us a little bit about the logistics as the supply of vaccine ramps up and they're pushing it out to pharmacies and other places.
Yeah, so we're working with local governments and our CDC partners to make sure that the vaccines are being allocated, and it's up to, depending on the state and the county by county, it just varies based on you know, what the restrictions are for based on eligibility. For Florida, we just went up to, as of Monday, patients age 40 and up are going to be eligible. So it's being, you know, controlled on the between the local governments and the CDC.
Now, is CVS using more than one kind of vaccination, or are you just using one particular brand?
Yeah, so it does vary by county, just depending on what is allocated for those areas. But our stores do have all three vaccines. It just depends store by store. So we have some with the Moderna. The majority have Pfizer. And some also are starting to have the J&J vaccine as well.
Okay.
And when patients go to make their appointment, it will actually show what vaccine is available at that location. So patients will know ahead of time as to what vaccine is going to be offered to them.
Now, when people roll into a CVS location, is a pharmacist there administering the shot? What's the process like?
Yeah, so patients, once they check in on their phone that they are here for their vaccine, we do have a dedicated team of both pharmacists and registered pharmacy technicians who are also certified to give vaccines, working as a team to be able to administer them.
549-2937 as we talk with Dr. Amy Lynn Safadi, pharmacy manager with CVS Health. It's interesting, doctor, to note that the Biden administration is rethinking its strategy for vaccinations. Data is showing that the big government-run mass sites, like one we have here in Jacksonville, a FEMA-run site, the attendance is lagging well behind a cheaper federal effort to distribute these doses via retail pharmacies like CVS stores. So you guys have been a success story. Why do you think that is?
I think that patients, you know, they have a relationship with their pharmacist and in their community. We are the most accessible healthcare to a patient who might not have insurance, but might have a question. They could always come in and speak to their pharmacist. So I think it has to do with the level of trust that patients have with their community pharmacy. So that might be contributing to it. It's just patients come in and they just wanted to, you know, make sure it's their pharmacist that's going to be there giving them their vaccine. It all has to do with that level of trust that we build in the community and that patient-pharmacist relationship.
Interesting. Yeah, here's some numbers for everyone. The retail pharmacy program, this is federal data, they signed up 21 chains and 17,000 stores. What they found is that they can get the vaccines to more Americans more efficiently through the retail pharmacies. Doctor, do you know how many Americans have been vaccinated so far at CVS pharmacies?
To date, I don't have the exact number, but we are adding more and more stores every day that are going live with having the vaccines. So everything is updated on our website on a daily and weekly basis. So the majority of our stores will be having the vaccine, if they don't have it now, within the near future.
So that's important to note. People can't just assume if they walk into a CVS that the vaccine is available. It's not at single place yet.
Exactly, yes. Appointments they can only be made online or through the app, or if there's someone who doesn't have access to internet or smartphone, they can call our customer service at 1-800-SHOP-CVS to get assistance with that appointment. But it is important to note that patients cannot just walk in for a vaccine, or they can't call the local store to make an appointment. Everything is done electronically.
Lots of tweets as we talk with CVS Health this morning about the retail pharmacy federal vaccination program. Peter tweets the show, the more convenient the site, the better. It's fine with me if the mega sites close, if the demand isn't there. Here is a tweet. There is nothing like the profit motive to teach you efficiency, even if there isn't any profit in vaccines for these pharmacies. They know how to execute on scale. Is that part of the success story behind the retail pharmacy program?
Well, when it comes to vaccinations of pharmacists, we've been training our whole lives and careers for this. We've been given the opportunity to vaccinate many years ago on the state level. So all of our pharmacists are trained to administer vaccinations as we do daily with expanded immunizations and then every year for our seasonal flu vaccine. So this is something that is very, of course, it's different and it's new, but also very similar to what we're all used and accustomed to already doing in our stores.
Here is a tweet from Kevin. At the FEMA sites, you have to wait 15 minutes after you get your shot before you can leave in case you get a side effect. Are CVS and other pharmacies doing the same? So
yes, definitely.
They are. So if you get vaccinated at CVS, you've got to sit there for 15 minutes.
Yes, we do have areas for patients to wait, just to give that 15-minute grace period, just to make sure that no one experiences any, you know, allergic reactions or side effects. And we do have a colleague that is on site, being, you know, monitoring these patients as well, just to make sure that everyone is comfortable and, you know, they're feeling good before they leave the store.
Okay. And so have you had any hiccups or problems as this has been going on now for months? What have been the biggest logistical challenges to receiving all the supply, in keeping inventory, vaccinating people, and then tracking the people you vaccinated? Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, everything has been going rather very efficiently, just because the way our system, our online system, is integrated with our you know, system in the store. We're able to see the patients as they check in on their phone to come in. We're given ample supplies as far as, you know, vaccination supplies go. So there hasn't really been any issues with that. In the beginning, when we knew that the vaccine was going to be coming, we worked to make sure a lot of our pharmacy technicians were immunization certified. And that direction was given, you know, depending on state-to-state government, but registered pharmacy technicians are able to administer COVID-19 vaccines. Mm. So that was our, you know, we were making sure that as many technicians as possible would be able to complete that training and be certified. And all of our technicians also have active CPR certifications to be able to respond to anyone who, you know, should they have an allergic reaction. So that's really been the, you know, the biggest change was getting more technician immunizers, and that's been helping our process this entire time.
I see. Okay. What's your advice for people who just haven't been able to get an appointment yet? A listener tweeted the show, "I've been trying and trying to get an appointment at CVS, just can't get in yet." And then he tweeted me later last night and said, "Oh, I just got my appointment. The universe must have been listening to me." How much demand is there out there? Because, you know, for months now here in Florida, we've heard people refreshing websites over and over, whether it's at Publix or a pharmacy site, just mm-hmm. trying and trying to get their appointment. So can you take us through what that's been like over the last weeks and what you expect in the coming weeks?
Well, as we get more and more stores that are going to offer the vaccine, there's just that many more appointments that become available. So I'd recommend that if people are looking for an appointment, just to make sure they're checking the website frequently as new stores are getting added on a weekly basis. And also checking different zip codes and surrounding areas, because there are a lot of stores that might not be in your immediate area but do have availability if patients are, you know, are willing to drive a little bit to get to a store that has the vaccine. So it's definitely something that sometimes requires a little bit of patience, but if you, you know, log on and check it enough times, the appointments do show up. So mm-hmm. it's been, most patients that I spoke to and, you know, my family members have been able to all get appointments as well. So I'm excited for them.
That's great. We're talking right now with Dr. Amy Lynn Safadi, PharmD, pharmacy manager at CVS Health, because it turns out that the Federal Retail Pharmacy Program has been wildly successful. The federal vaccination sites run by FEMA have administered just 1.7 million doses since the beginning of February, about 67,000 shots a day. That's about 2.5% of all doses administered nationwide. By contrast, the feds report that on March 11th alone, they administered nearly 1 million doses in a single day at the nation's pharmacies, and more than 5 million over the next 4 days. This is according to federal vaccination data. And that, you know, that's even though that the mass vaccination sites run smoothly with minimal wait times. But mm-hmm. As you're saying, doctor, the retail pharmacies have been more convenient for people. It's cheaper for the federal government to work through a company like CVS on this. And it was so fascinating to hear you say that, because people sort of have an emotional connection to their neighborhood pharmacy. You think that's why they're more comfortable going in there to a CVS or Walgreens or what have you, because they might already know their pharmacist. They shop there regularly. And that's why you're seeing this high traffic.
Yeah, I definitely have that connection, you know, with our patients, because when you're at a location for a while, you see the same people all the time. They come in, even if they're not picking up a prescription, to show pictures of their grandkids or talk about something, just to say hello. So it definitely is you really get that connection with your patients and your community, because you're there as a healthcare pillar in the community. So I think it definitely has to deal with that level of trust and that relationship between the patient and the community pharmacist.
Now, let me ask you this as well. This is sort of a loss leader for companies like CVS because you are vaccinating a lot of people for free and you've got to staff that, and that costs money. But at the same time, I would think if you've got additional people coming into the store to be vaccinated, they'll probably pick up a few items while they're there. So does it all even out in the end?
As far as, you know, the vaccine is subsidized from either patient's insurance or from the the government standpoint for patients without insurance. But our biggest concern and, you know, what we're working towards is getting as many people vaccinated as possible to make our community safer again. So it's more about being able to make a difference in the community and being able to get one step closer to a sense of normalcy and give these patients a step of, you know, a piece of hope and be able to mm-hmm. get one step closer to living life as they used to.
You know, it's the closest companies have come since World War II, you know, with mass mobilization to help a federal effort, truly. The way these companies are doing this mass vaccination program. All right, let's go to a couple of calls. 549-2937. Mark in Riverside. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Melissa. It's your MSBESQ from Twitter fan.
Oh, hey.
Two things. Number one, we went to a Walgreens for our first jab of the Pfizer, and it was a very, very difficult experience. We waited almost 3 hours, and the line was literally out the door around the whole store by the time we left. On the other hand, we went to our local neighborhood Panama Pharmacy, walking distance from my house. It was smooth in and out. They knew us. It couldn't have been a more different and more comfortable experience. So I'm really grateful they're rolling these out to our local neighborhood pharmacies instead of making chains richer. On the other hand, Mayor Lenny Curry is, along with DeSantis, is literally trying to kill us. Taking the mask mandate off now in the middle of this 30% growth, it's just irresponsible. They want Biden to fail. If he does, they're going to blame him. If he succeeds, they're going to take the credit. It's all about their power. Thank you.
Well, I know that's your opinion, Marco. That we're not going to buttress that because we do want to at least give credence to the mayor saying he made this decision based on data. And Dr. Safadi, we're talking about a rescinding of a local mask mandate here in Duval County. Mm-hmm. Okay, so can you give one final piece of advice to people who are still seeking their vaccine appointments at their pharmacy?
Yes, definitely. I would just say that as soon as the vaccine is available to you, to make that appointment as soon as possible. As soon as everyone is eligible, I urge everyone to get the vaccine, regardless of manufacturer. All three vaccines are proven effective at preventing severe disease, so it's important to get the first vaccine that is available to you. And I think that utilizing our online tools will help will make the process a lot easier for patients to be able to get in and out with their appointments.
Thanks so much. And you can also use apps to make appointments through a pharmacy
exactly.
like CVS if you want to download an app. Dr. Amy Lynn Safadi, PharmD, she's pharmacy manager with CVS Health. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Still to come, how local restaurant owners are coping right now as the mask mandate ends and more customers come through the door at the same time. We'll be right back.
It's the first Florida legislative session to take place during a pandemic in modern times. And every weeknight during this unique session, Capitol Report will keep you informed on what happens, the people, the politics, and the pandemic throughout the 2021 Florida lawmaking session on Capitol Report.
tonight at 6:30 on WJCT News 89.9.
Money's been tight for a lot of families in this pandemic, and they have had to cut back, even on really essential essentials.
Your neighbor is potentially so poor that their child is sitting in their own mess all day.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, Diaper Banks, trying to keep up with surging demand. We'll have the rest of the day's business news, the numbers from Wall Street as well, next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6, here on WJCT News 89.9.
On the next Fresh Air, the real horrors of Jim Crow America mixed with supernatural horrors like monsters and ghosts in the HBO series Lovecraft Country. We'll speak with the show's writer and producer, Misha Green, who adapted it from a novel of the same name. Join us
tomorrow at noon on WJCT News 89.9.
Much of the economy is on the mend.
This isn't going to be a flip a switch and everything goes back. I mean, recessions never are.
But can it make a full recovery?
This one seemed like it could be because, well, once we get vaccinated, everything will just go back to normal, right? And the answer is probably not.
We report from Houston and speak to businesses and workers hoping for better times ahead. That's next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, we've been wondering how local restaurants have been doing with everything that's been going on. More people coming in to dine indoors just as the mask mandate in Jacksonville expires. Chef Tom Gray of Prati Italia at the St. John's Town Center has been busy all throughout these times, and he's on the line. Chef Tom, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you. So tell us what the past year's been like over at Prati Italia. You opened actually right before the pandemic began. So my goodness, I know it's been stressful. Tell us what the last year's been like for you.
Yes, we opened 2 months before we were shut down for COVID. So it's been quite a roller coaster, and you know, that was challenging enough just to create a new brand in that time frame. And then on top of that, we ended up developing three more companies, essentially, but, you know, or three more businesses within the business. Like we developed a retail to go program that we're doing with Native Sun, and we literally just added 8 new items to that lineup just this week out there. We created gift boxes to go, and then we put together a holidays at home event and events: Easter, Mother's Day, Thanksgiving, Christmas, all those things. And so all that took a tremendous amount of, besides just, you know, food and packaging and all those things, we had to recreate a website that was a pay website so that we could have contactless delivery. So we have had a roller coaster of a year.
I bet. It's just incredible the stress your business sector has been under. So my hat is my chef's hat. My toque is off to you in terms of how you've managed to navigate through this. What do you think was the toughest part of all of this for you?
Oh, gosh, the toughest part. Well, you know, a lot of it's the unknown. The sales were decimated overnight, and that was really tough. You know, it's tough to have, you know, so many employees between our two restaurants. We had close to 120 employees, and having to let so many people go with the unknown and the uncertainty, and then trying to open up at all the different, you know, stages of, you know, partial, indoor, you know, all those things. It was very difficult. And then we were fortunate to have received PPP, which then helped us do, you know, as much as we could do what it was designed for, which was to get people back employed. You know, but people hadn't been as comfortable coming out yet. So we're starting to see some increases, you know, interestingly, in town at Town Hall, our little restaurant in the neighborhood. It started coming back faster, and the only thing we can imagine is maybe it's just because it's you know, a tight knit neighborhood, and maybe people feel safer around their own neighbors. Like I'm not really sure what the difference is between the two, but Prati has been a little bit slower coming back, and so we've been doing all these other items around it. You know, the other key thing that we lost was all the group dining. Everyone ended all their events, so hopefully that will be back later this year, and people want to get out and host their clients and staff and everything else and come out and have a good time.
Right. So both at Prada Italia and Town Hall in San Marco, how do you plan to handle safety issues now that the mask order is gone?
Well, from a safety standpoint, we created all new protocols immediately. And one of the things we did was, you know, we observed, you know, electrostatic disinfecting in the buildings, and we went out and bought that equipment. And we do that now ourselves multiple times a week to keep the buildings disinfected, surfaces, you know, gloves, et cetera, you know, things like that. So we're not backing off on those protocols. We don't know that, you know, it's hard to say yet where, you know, where we are. It's good to see things are improving. I got my first vaccination. I finally aged in. So I'm on track, and I'd like to see our staff to get vaccinated when possible. But, you know, a lot of them are young. You know, 18 to 30 is just, I think, is, you know, just a few weeks away from being able to be vaccinated, and then that's still
next week, yeah.
Oh, next week, okay. So even with that.
Sure. Now, Easter's coming up. Tell us what people can do to get their Easter dinners from you.
They can either come in, make a reservation for brunch at either restaurant. We're not opening dinner that night. We're giving the team a break. But we also have these amazing grazing boxes and, you know, fun foods to bring home to have your holiday at home. And that's, you can do that online up until Thursday morning at 10 a.m.
Check it out, both Prada Italia and Town Hall on the San Marco Square. Chef Tom Gray on the line with us, one of the top chefs in town, and it's so good to hear your voice. Everybody get out and enjoy yourself safely, of course. And Chef Tom, thanks so much. We'll check in with you soon.
Thank you so much.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. And thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Josh Torres is show director. Our news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. Keep your feedback coming. We always appreciate it. Send those emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And catch our podcast up later today, wherever you like to listen. You can also listen through the WJCT app. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on WJCT News 89.9 Jacksonville. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Stay dry out there and have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.